The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. Kay Murray, Craig Burley, Shaka Hislop here with you in the studio. We're joined by Don Hutchison as well. And a little later, Yanaga Fyotov will be with us to talk Bundesliga, and we'll also cast our eyes over what happened in La Liga today. But let's start in the Premier League, where Liverpool took on Crystal Palace. And very early on, Alisson was called into action here, Shaka.
Yeah, hopeful ball just put back into the box. Zaha gets on the end of it. Doesn't get a great touch. He thinks he's got Alisson beat. But with the help of the post, it stays out.
Palace wanted a penalty here.
Tsimikas steps across Benteke. I don't know. Shaq, you don't think
yeah,
so?
Yeah, I don't think. Just seeing it in real time, I don't think it was a penalty. And the replay doesn't do enough to convince me.
Liverpool get two bites of the cherry here.
Unlike him. Unlike Diego Jota, he's been excellent.
And then there was a goal from Sadio Mane, his 100th goal.
Set pieces the order of the day for Liverpool, who Palace just don't do well enough defending the second ball. And then the second time of asking, again, Salah allowed to sneak around far post.
Yeah, and then came this lovely volley from Keita, and that made it 3-0.
Keita off the bench.
Great volley.
Yeah, good timing. Not easy skill.
And not an easy game, according to Jurgen Klopp. In fact, he said it was one of the most hard-fought 3-0s that he'd ever seen. Don Hutchison was on the commentary for this one today. Don, would you say that Klopp's right in saying it was that, one of the most hard-fought 3-0s he'd ever seen?
100%. It was an amazing game. Palace played their part. They started really well, Kev. They had chance after chance. As you saw there, Alisson sort of palmed on around the post. It was their work rate. It was the new Patrick Vieira. They were playing into Conor Gallagher in midfield. Tariq Mitchell at left back had Mo Salah tied up for most of the game. But it was the small margins, it was the fine details. It was three set pieces that undone Palace. Jarrod Riedewald switches off for the second one. The first one, you know, Mane taps it in. That's the ninth time on the spin he scored against Palace. So he wants to play against Palace every single week. And then Naby Keita topped it off with an amazing third goal. And Jurgen Klopp had to rest Trent, who was unwell before the game. He took a chance on resting Andy Robertson at left back. Konate come in and played really well. But it was the midfield three and the front three that he stuck with, their strongest six, in my opinion. But my word, they had to work for it.
They had to, but...
Well, it's a Liverpool back four that I'd imagine never played together before, all those players. And so that's a risk in itself. With Konate coming in, and you've got Milner going back there, and Tsimikas coming in for Robertson, so he's able to rotate. And there is always a risk factor to that. I mean, Palace looked awful in the first game of the season at Chelsea and have gradually got better, demolished Tottenham last time out. I mean, just played them off the park. So Vieira's starting to get what he wants across, and Klopp said and Don said, it was a risk for them to make some of those changes, particularly at the back, but these guys up front are banging the goals in again. I mean, Mane had a pretty average season by his standards last year, so he's looking to come back, and Mo Salah's goals record is quite incredible.
Let's talk a little bit about Sadio Mane then, Shaka, and everything that he's achieved with this Liverpool side so far.
Listen, I think he's an outstanding player, and his numbers speak for themselves. And as important as Mo Salah is to Liverpool and the successes over recent years, I think Sadio Mane is a close second behind him. And that's not taken into consideration Van Dijk, who joined just over 18 months ago. Sadio Mane has been simply outstanding, and it continues to show. And despite that poor season that, by his standards, that Craig is referencing, and all sorts of rumour and speculation about him and Mo Salah and disagreements within that dressing room, they continue to score goals. And Mane continues to be an integral part of any successes. And as I say, it continues to show week in, week out. And if he replicates the form of a couple of seasons ago, this is a Liverpool team that it will be reckoned with, as we've been predicting.
Just notice the name on that graphic, that list, and it was one of the greatest players of his generation, Kevin Keegan. And it was 100 goals. which is less than Sadio Mane, and it was in 300 games. Mm-hmm. It's almost 100 games more. And so I think that shows you Mane in 224 games, you know, 3-2-3 for Kevin, just give or take, you know, almost 100, and yet he's done it in the same amount of time. And Kevin Keegan, for those that remember, the younger people, was an icon.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's kind of, and Mo Salah's ahead of that, you know. So and also, what we should remember, and it's the same with John Barnes and others, is these guys are not strikers.
Yeah.
They're wide players. You know, they're effectively wide players in the front three, so they've got two jobs to do, or many jobs to do. One of them is to provide for a Firmino or a Jota or a striker, whoever it is. The other is to be that midfield wide man, attacker, and the other is to get back and help the fullback. And yet they're still, you know, contributing with this amount of goals. Those two have been, stating the obvious, incredible signings.
Yeah, what about Mo Salah today for you, Don?
He was good. I mean, Tyrick Mitchell, don't get me wrong, I thought the young kid had a brilliant game against him, but Craig's absolutely spot on. When you look at Sadio Mane and you look at Mo Salah put one of the most defensive shifts in I think I've ever seen in terms of his performances today. He had to because he recognised the danger. James Milner needed protection. Mane done it on the other side, and then he got his rewards with his laces finished, but it took him... Listen, I don't want to say Mo Salah had a bad game because he didn't, but young Tyrick Mitchell was amazing against him. It was the fact that both of them were doing all their work going backwards. We hardly seen them going forwards, but yet both of them on the score sheet, Sadio Mane gets the first one, Salah gets the second one, and Keita gets the third one. So it was one of them games where it was a brilliant watch. It was end-to-end. Palace had enough chances to take something out of the game. Jota missed an absolute sitter in the first period of the game where you think Firmino's starting. He just goes with a little bit of finesse and tucks it in. I've got no idea why Jota went for power from 2 or 3 yards. But it was very impressive that when Liverpool needed to go to the well, their wide men done it, and yet they still scored.
But Don, don't you think that a lot of games where you're pulling your hair out with Mo Salah, watching him, there's a lot of games like that, and then yet he steps up quite often and scores a brilliant goal, and we kind of forget sometimes about his general performance. I mean, taking too many touches or the ball bouncing off him. That seems to me to happen a lot, but then he still produces moments of magic.
Yeah, I think I've seen a little bit different from him. I know it's early on in the season, but last season when teams played really defensive, Craig, and really deep against him, he was picking the ball up on the halfway line and he had two or three men to beat, so he was popping it off, and then he gets a little bit lazy and he's passing. Some of his passing that he gives away, us being central midfield players, we know they're quite simplistic passes, they're easy ones. He sort of switches off. I've seen a different side of him since the start of the season. And it all starts, I think it's a conversation we've all had, and we look at Liverpool and we go, well, what's actually happened when the centre-halves have been injured? Their best players, like Jordan Henderson and like Fabinho, were playing as centre-backs. So now they're back in midfield, and Thiago's in midfield. There's more scope for Mane to play high up. There's more scope for Mo Salah to play high up. Then all of a sudden, you win the ball back in midfield, they get fed straight away, so they're straight away 1v1 with fullback. So it's the whole knock-on effect that all them players were injured. And it wasn't the fact that Liverpool were conceding goals when all the centre-backs were injured. I think it was the knock-on effect of actually what was happening to Mo Salah and Mane in the front men, with a midfield three and completely missing.
City themselves could have done with some goals today. It played out a 0-0 draw with Southampton. In fact, Southampton had a penalty overturned and a Kyle Walker red card overturned. That was by John Moss. What did you make of that decision, Craig?
I thought it was the right decision, and I could see why it was given in real time, but that's why we have this technology. And so it could have been worse for Manchester City, who... I have already dropped points at Tottenham this season. Yes, they've scored some goals in other games, and 6 against Leipzig. But can you keep relying on midfielders and attacking midfielders or wide guys to be doing it for you? And this lack of getting anybody in the striking position in the transfer window is extremely concerning for me if you were a Man City fan. I mean, it really is. And today's performance just was not good enough.
Yeah, there's so much you could say about today's game, starting with Pep Guardiola in midweek talking about the team not having any rest. And I think that plays into the hand of an opponent. If you come into the Etihad and that's what you know their manager is saying, I think that gives you a little bit of a boost. Seeing that, Southampton were very worthy of their point. I'm with Craig. I didn't think it was a penalty. Kyle Walker initially gives the ball away. I think Armstrong's touch is a little heavy and doesn't see Walker coming back across him, who puts his body in between Armstrong and the ball. I understand why the referee pointed to it in real time, but from the time you see the replay, you always felt it was going to be overturned. I thought that also was the right decision. But now here we are talking about a City team who came into the season as favourites with one shot on target at home, as good as Southampton were, and give them their credit, fully deserving of a point. Who thought we'd be talking about Manchester City against anybody in this league at home with one shot on target coming in the 90th minute? And that speaks to why they wanted a striker as much as they did in the summer. And though Pep Guardiola tried to gloss over it and say, well, we're good enough, and in truth they are, there just isn't that, there isn't the wiggle room that they had last season this time around, and that may come back to cost them.
One shot on target, as Shaka said, Don, do you think they're going to regret not getting a striker this summer?
It's going to be the topic, Kay, of every time Man City don't win a game or if they're shot shy, we're all going to say they need a number nine, and it's rightly so, and Shaka's spot on with the dynamics of a game and what it does to a dressing room. If you're Southampton rocking up at the Etihad and you see Kane or Haaland or Lukaku or Ronaldo, whichever centre-forward you want to choose, straight away you're on the back foot. If you're playing against a Raheem Sterling who's a false nine, you might fancy the challenge. If you're playing against a Jesus who might play central, you fancy the challenge. But when you've got a recognised goal scorer, one of the very best, who generate between 25 and 30 a season, it's a different ball game. Now, I know they got by last season, Man City, but I don't think they can do it again. It doesn't feel like the same City to me. It doesn't feel like they've got goals in them. Of course, they can spank anyone because they can hit their groove and they're such a talented side and they've got a great manager. But it's on today's like, it's today's like today where the really best, the cream of number nines get their goals. It was a little bit like when Ronaldo scored two against Newcastle the other week. It's just inevitable. These guys make the difference. And whenever City don't win or if they're shot shy, we're all going to say they need a number nine.
Yeah.
I saw some wide play from them and a couple of times get the ball in the box, but they haven't really got any physical presence. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. He blamed again, by the way, what Shaka said. He said the European hangover and reiterated.
Well, he's also talked about the supporters at, you know, getting behind the team and filling the stadium more. And there's already some things early on coming out from him. But listen, we talked about Chelsea, I think it was yesterday, and how Lukaku gives them these different options now, that they can still play that possession game if they want, but they've got the ability to put the ball in from wide positions because they have a physical presence. At this moment in time, City don't have that. We know Grealish and Bernardo Silva and De Bruyne and all these players want to play these little one-twos. But when that's not working, going to get crosses into the box. Good old-fashioned crosses into the box does not go away. It doesn't become old-fashioned, right? It does not. Ask Real Madrid with Benzema. Ask Bayern Munich with Lewandowski. It doesn't get old-fashioned. It's not something from yesteryear. It's part of the game. And unfortunately, at the moment, in some games, when City are unable to break teams down, they haven't really got the ability to throw it in the box because they haven't got the presence in there unless Fernandinho makes a forward run or De Bruyne is on the pitch and he makes a forward run, some of the bigger players. The others are diminutive. Mm. And so they don't. I mean, Harry Kane, for example, who they were chasing heavily, is one of the best at that. If it's not working through the middle, sling it in the box, he'll attack it. They don't have that player. I'm with Don. I thought at the start of the season it was going to be more difficult to do it without a striker, not impossible, but just more difficult to rely on the likes of Gundogan and others repeating the seasons they had last year.
But to the point about the European hangover, and this is for me, I hate to see a club like Manchester City and a manager like Pep Guardiola using European action as your excuse. This is not your first go-round. This is not the first time you're competing on these multiple fronts. This is why you spend the money that you do. And I don't fault you for that, so that you can compete on all these different levels. Who else How many other teams in the Premier League can bring Foden and De Bruyne off the bench and still offer an excuse about a European hangover? I'm sorry, when we're talking about Manchester City and their spending, that excuse becomes flimsy and, I, in my opinion, beyond a manager and a club like Guardiola and Manchester City.
Mikel Arteta didn't need any excuses after Arsenal's win today. They made it back-to-back wins when they beat Burnley 1-0. Have they turned a corner then, Don?
Listen, what I would say is the Norwich game last week was perfect for Arsenal because Norwich were never, ever going to change their style. So they were going to try and outplay Arsenal. That was never, ever going to happen. They've not learned any lessons whatsoever, Daniel Farke's men. But this is the test. This was like the Brentford game on the Friday night match day one, where long balls in the box, long throws, as Craig said there, crosses in, wide free kicks. Everyone was pumped into the box. So this was more of a test. So listen, if you're Mikel Arteta and you've just gone back-to-back wins, you'll certainly take that after that horrific start of the season.
Here's your question, though, Key. You ask about Arsenal turning a corner. What is Arsenal turning a corner look like? Are we talking about turning a corner so they're not going to be in a relegation dogfight, as we saw after three games when they had 0 points, or beating Norwich and now Burnley by a single goal, a set piece, by the way, very well executed by Martin Odegaard. But this should be the least that we expect of a team like Arsenal. This is probably Arsenal's strongest 11 that Arteta can put out. Never mind the COVID and the injuries of the weeks gone by and that excuse that he rightly could claim, but now you've got everybody back. You've got just about a full-strength team to call on. You've got Thomas Partey back in your starting lineup and contributing well. Beating Burnley is the least of what we should expect of a team whose ambitions are those of Arsenal's. If we're talking about an Arsenal that are trying to avoid just being the bottom half of the table, then, yeah, sure, you've turned a corner.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have turned the corner, but unfortunately, the other corner they were peeking around was staring into the abyss. So it's an improvement. But the one thing I liked about this Arsenal performance was they actually had some guts and stood up at least to these free kicks and set pieces and long throws that Burnley were clearly going to throw in and did. And particularly Gabriel and Tomiyasu, and at times Ben White and Kieran Taylor, they really stood up and showed a bit of fight. Now, decisions have been made. Leno has been dropped last two games. Ramsdale is in. We've seen Gabriel returning. We've seen Ben White returning. That's a partnership that's going to take some time. Tomiyasu from Bologna, I thought, did some really good defensive work. And, of course, Thomas Partey to give them some protection in front. Those are all key players. And I do think if you're an Arsenal fan, it looks, well, I have to say, it looks a lot better on paper just seeing these guys in the team. Because what I was looking at with, you know, Chambers and Holding and, Pablo Mari?
Yeah.
The centre-halves. I was looking at just weak, tepid defending, looking at each other going, well, I'm doing my job. These guys looked as if at least, and we can only talk about the last couple of games and today's game against Burnley, they looked as if they wanted to work as a unit. And they looked as if they wanted to fight and defend and then let the other guys go and play. That's at least a start for Arsenal. And that's a bonus for Mikel Arteta.
All right. They are up to 13th now.
Oh, yep. All right.
He's the bottom half of the Premier League table. Yeah, Arsenal climbing after those back-to-back wins. We won't go into too much of what's going on at the bottom.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Bayern absolutely thrashed newly promoted Bochum today. 7-0 it finished. And I suppose the biggest surprise here is that Lewandowski was only the scorer of one of those goals, but it was a record 13th Bundesliga home goal for him in a row. And we now welcome in Jan Agur Fjørtoft. Obviously, he was watching this game. I mean, what really can we say about this? Is there too much to take away from it, Jan?
Well, we can say, is it good for the Bundesliga? No. Is it good for Bayern Munich? Yes. And I think we see some signs from Nagelsmann how he wants to do it this season, because they're playing Bochum at home. They're just beating Barcelona away from home. And you think maybe he will rest some players. He rested Upamecano. He was on the bench, the best defender. He rested a world champion, Pavard. I'm not sure that weakened the team. Musiala was on the bench, but they were on fire. And I think I will name one player. And you saw that 1-0 goal from Leroy Sané. After being booed off the pitch against Cologne at home, he's been brilliant lately, using his confidence, using the trust from Nagelsmann and from Hansi Flick, the national coach. He's brilliant. And as you said, Lewandowski scoring for fun. And they always also took the luxury today to take him off to get Choupo-Moting on. And what did he do? Of course he scored.
And they were wearing those very nice kits that were a nod to Oktoberfest as well.
Exactly.
Even though it's been cancelled for another year. Anyway, I'd like to get the panel's take on this from Julian Nagelsmann, the Bayern coach. He says, American football is much more technologically advanced than our football. The quarterback has an earpiece to hear his coach. We absolutely need that. Football must stop hiding behind tradition and revolutionise itself. That's not such a bad idea, is it, Craig?
Yeah, it's a terrible idea.
Why? They shout at them from the sidelines. What's the difference in being in their ear?
It's terrible. Look. American football, every play in American football is a set piece.
Yeah.
Right? Soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, is a free-flowing, fast game most of the time. Right? You have players on the field that have to think for themselves, that you can trust. You have captains, you have experienced players, you have inexperienced players, and you still have the ability to get a message across. I've never heard anything so ridiculous in all my life. It's the most stupid thing I think I've heard from a coach in quite some time.
Jan, what do you think of this idea from Nagelsmann?
I don't like to agree with Craig, but I have to agree with him. I have to agree with him, but listen... Julian Nagelsmann is 34. I mean, we are a generation when we got the facts and we thought that was the celebration of our day. And Julian Nagelsmann just tried to be a techno geek here. He tried to be a modern coach. I think that the main reason for me against it is that you can't compare American football with European football in terms of the fluency of the game. We see now when we try to have VAR, it's good to have the right decisions. Goal line technology, yeah, in or out, the goal should stand or not stand. But still, the football fans, European football fans, we don't like that they stop the game too much. Can I see this happening? Maybe in a long, long-term future. But I think that Julian Nagelsmann here just tried to be 34 years of age. He's a very intelligent coach. I'm certain that he don't think that this will happen overnight. And I think this was after he was speaking to an American coach and they're talking about the development of the game. And sometimes when we have those kind of discussions, some funny thing comes out of our head.
I thought he was going to say, yeah, and then he had it after a night on the beer.
That's what it sounds like.
Oktoberfest.
It's been cancelled. Shaka, you're technologically advanced. Do you?
Hold on. Are you suggesting that Jan and I are not technologically advanced?
No, that's
wrong. That is wrong. If Stevie Nicol had been sat here, that's a valid point. Not us.
Listen, I don't like to agree with Craig or Jan.
Why?
Shaka, what if you're on a penalty shootout and you're getting a little... And he's got to go right.
A coach can shout that from his side. And listen, I... There are a number of ways I think that technology can and has improved the game. Jan mentioned goal line technology. I think that's been great. The other one that you could see making sense is VAR, and we're still working through that and trying to get that in a way that pleases everyone. With this from Nagelsmann, I can't even see how it improves the game. Never mind trying to get it right. Never mind trying to get the technology right and how it works. I don't see how it improves the game to start with. So it's a non-starter. And for me, I, as much as you may try to offer some kind of explanation as to how Nagelsmann came up with this, it makes absolutely no sense to me or dare I say anybody else involved.
What next? You walk out on the pitch with the players and hold their hand? I mean, it's everywhere. You know, there you go. Stand here. Stand there. Stand. They don't do it in basketball here. They don't do it in ice hockey here.
Nope.
They don't do it in baseball, I don't believe, although I don't
And those games have far more stops than soccer.
And as I say, I've never heard anything so silly in all my life. There is more communication now than ever.
And
go on, Jan.
No, I just said the funny thing was also I read the whole interview, and then he was talking about getting something into the player's shirt, so we should have this sensible thing that he can talk to them. How would you do that in practical? Will you have then 11 different channels? And will you say then, Kimmich, no, you Müller, no, Kimmich. And I mean, that is that. I don't believe he means this serious. I look forward to meet him, to ask him this question. And be sure, this is going to be the first question in my first interview with Julian Nagelsmann, because I can't believe he means this serious.
You're right. You should ask him that, Jan. That should be your whatever. I don't drop what you're doing, Jan, for the next few days. Find out if he's being serious or not, because he can't be.
I'm in Dortmund tomorrow. It's going to be hard to ask him there, but I'll try.
Okay, that's your mission, and you've chosen to accept it. Cologne took on Leipzig today. It finished 1-1. Let me just tell you, Leipzig now have one win, one draw, and three losses. It's not been a good start for Jesse Marsch, has it, Jan?
No, he's in trouble. This was an interesting game. There were disallowed goals. I think there were five VAR things that there were. And there were like a minute to just summarize the season of RB Leipzig. Poulsen missed a big, big chance. 1 minute later, Forsberg is a small margin of offside, and it wasn't given. But then they saved the 1-1. Timo Horn, the Cologne keeper, was excellent. For me, man of the match in this game. But Jesse Marsch, no, this is not working so far, but we know Jesse Marsch what kind of manager he is, and he wants to overdo a big thing, and he had some funny quotes before they lost 6-3 to Manchester City in the Champions League, and it was not like he was talking like a vice champion of the German Bundesliga. He said maybe they're a number two big for us and so on and so on. But football is quite simple. You have to win football games. He knows that. He had a lot of support from the management. Minslav is a big, big fan of Jesse Marsch. But you have to win football games. I think they will see this as a point taken in Cologne. Baumgartner and Cologne have done okay this season. But no, it's not working properly for RB Leipzig.
I know it's early in the season, Jan. And actually, some of their attacking play at Man City was actually quite good. But bearing in mind the players that they've lost, not just... Well, the last couple of seasons, but last summer, what is going to be acceptable for RB Leipzig for him, and say at the end of the season to survive, bearing in mind where Julian Nagelsmann has had them in the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's a very good question, because I think that RB Leipzig, with the money, with the way they work, with the scouting system, which is excellent, we saw that with the other Red Bull team and in Salzburg and in Champions League, did well ever so well with their talents against Sevilla. I think that it will be accepted that it will get him into Champions League, because Bayern Munich will win, as they will every year. And behind them, Dortmund, RB Leipzig, and so on, they will kind of compete with the third, second, and the last position in the Bundesliga. So I think that would be accepted. What will not be accepted, I think, in Leipzig, is that you won't see an improvement of the way the players develop and the way the team develop. Because they've had a good tradition of Ralf Rangnick, who was a mastermind of developing players, and your Julian Nagelsmann, who took them to the next level. And I can't see RB Leipzig accepting that the development of the club go backwards. So Champions League is a minimum target for Jesse March?
Well, they're way off right now when you look at the Bundesliga table. Not in the top half of that. Bayern Munich leading the way. Wolfsburg, Mainz and Borussia Dortmund behind them. But Leipzig are in the bottom half of the table right now, as you would expect after the run of results they've had so far. They are 13th with just 4 points, and there is a lot of work to be done for Jesse March and his side. More Bundesliga games coming up for you on Sunday on ESPN Plus. Stuttgart against Bayer Leverkusen. Borussia Dortmund taking on Union Berlin. Jan will be at that game. And Wolfsburg taking on Eintracht Frankfurt. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Saturday's Liga action with a debut goal for Falcao for Rayo Vallecano in their 3-0 win over Getafe. No goals in the game between Atleti and Athletic Club. Elche and Levante played out a 1-1 draw and Alaves were beaten 2-0 by Osasuna. Osasuna doing well in the top six so far. 8 points for them. But at the top of the table, it is Atleti, though things could change after Sunday's games when Valencia and Real Madrid face off. Let's check in on some of the rest of results in world football. A big result for Inter today in Serie A with a thrashing 6-1 over Bologna. Fiorentina looking good as well with a 2-1 win over Genoa. Serie A standings has Inter at the top of the table, followed by Mourinho's Roma. Milan have had a good start and Napoli are behind them. But as for Juve, they're in the bottom half of the table because they are still winless at this stage and take on Milan tomorrow. So here is the table. West Brom holding on to third with that result, but a few draws for them of late. North End staying right down in the drop zone in 17th, and you may realise that Middlesbrough not in the top half of the table there.
I was just going to say, are they still in that division?
Yes, they are. Right. They scored the opener today, and then Blackpool got two back and beat them.
The mighty
Less
Blackpool.
Less said about that, the better.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. The mighty Blackpool. Well, that's where we're at.
I'm
anyway.
Heartbroken, Kate.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Thanks so much for joining us. Stick around for extra time for a few giggles. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. On today's show, we have Shaka, Craig and Jan. And I'm not going to start with Craig today because it didn't get us off to a good start yesterday, did it, Shaka? Well, no, Craig, the other day you were really happy and then yesterday it wasn't the worst, but you were not happy on Extra Time.
Are you a judge and jury now?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
I think you might not hate the first question, though.
Well, I'll decide.
All right. I'm going to put it to Jan.
This could go anywhere.
And you can let us know what you think. Right. Jan, Jerome Ashkenazi asks, is everyone sleeping on Liverpool's title chances? It seems all the talk is on big summer signings versus stability Klopp has there.
Well, I think that, and you saw that today as well, and you listened to the crowd today, we're going to win the league without money and so on. I think that Klopp has been good at stating that to the players. This is our big chance. The the Chelsea's with Lukaku's, Manchester United are both the half of the Harlem Globetrotters. And still, this is our chance, Andy. We got Van Dijk from the beginning of the season. Can Liverpool go all the way? Absolutely. They can win the Premier League this season, of course.
Come on, then.
Well, I don't think anybody's sleeping on Liverpool. I haven't heard anybody that participates on this show saying, no, Liverpool have no chance. I haven't heard anybody. Now, that's not to say everyone or at least a couple of people don't have them as their title winners. I personally have got, I believe I've got Man City down. But I think along with Liverpool and Chelsea and possibly Man United, I think we all feel they can be a title challenge. So I'm not sure anybody's sleeping on Liverpool.
Yeah, sleeping on Liverpool? I think everybody had them in our top four. I think most had them at the least third behind City and Chelsea. So I don't understand how.
I think one of the things is that, and I know Dan asked Stevie this, was it a poor transfer window for them? And then they had an argument. But I think what Dan was trying to say was, and it's valid on both, that they didn't really go out and spend big, which they probably don't have. But they did sign, they signed Konate, for example. But then they got these players back. Mm-hmm. It's always kind of, you could see both sides of it.
Okay.
But don't think anybody's sleeping on them.
All right, so it's an okay start. The next one is for you, Craig.
Oh, lovely.
Look how happy he is.
I can't wait.
And you'll be even happier to know it's a United question.
Sheffield United.
Here we go.
God, dear.
Craig.
Yes.
If you were the decision maker at United, would you try to bring in someone like a Zidane or a Conte, given that those are the sort of managers who could get the best out of a talented group of players? And who would you prefer, Zidane or Conte?
Mm. Oh.
Well, I would stick with what I've got at the moment, because that's going to give us something to talk about.
What's going to be your reasoning for this? The most surprising comment
tonight. I have to have a reason to live. and try and poke Jan in the ribs. And it's very early in the season. It's actually a difficult answer to your question. Apart from the fact, if I was given a choice between those two, oh my God. It's a difficult one because if I'm owning a club and I know Antonio Conte is going to come in and there's going to be some tough love and some upset people and he's going to bang his fist and demand money and that might not last long. And Zidane would be the other side of the coin. If I wanted immediate success, short term, I would go for Conte.
Yeah, I do,
because it's quite interesting, because that's sometimes it's underestimated which manager you come after. So if Ole Gunnar say, will he be fired for Christmas, will they go for the same kind of managers? Zinedine Zidane will be the perfect company's manager again, like always. Ole will never go in the public and demand that. Conte, he will be in the... He's moaning all the time. He's like the grumpy manager version of Craig Burley. I mean, he's had any time, you know? So he will do that. And so I'm not sure they will do that. They tried that with Mourinho and it didn't work out.
Yesterday it was you and Robbo.
I think he's talking about your hair, Craig. I think it's a jab about your hair, Craig.
Yesterday it was you and Robbo. It was getting the potential human resources phone call. Today I'm getting all the stick. It's very difficult to take.
So you're not having that comparison.
What comparison?
That Conte is the managerial version of you.
I'll take any comparison. I'm not first. Good or bad. I'm
careful. All right.
When I leave here, I start skipping and I'm laughing. And
yeah, we know. We've seen it.
Probably the time Nicol could walk.
With his gout.
When his gout, he actually got wheeled out of here before you came. His gout was so bad, right? It wasn't these, it was different chairs. Dan had to wheel him out of the studio all the way back to his desk. and he sat there. Yeah.
When the desks were still here in this side of the building?
Yes, yeah.
OK, because I was just imagining him getting pushed through the corridor.
I think he was quite enjoying it.
Oh, goodness.
His gout was... That was when he was trying different... dietary supplements for his
different beers. He's trying different beers.
He was even on Prosecco at one point.
True story.
He was trying to.
True story. His doctor told him he's a Budweiser drinker, right? Through and through. His doctor said they need to lay off the beers, so he switched to Heineken. True story.
Did you tell him?
He was trying to find a way to not have the gout, but not give up alcohol.
Why take a fizzy drink? That was his so-called life.
Now, bearing in mind, this is the most Prosecco light drink you've ever seen in your life. He came in, he says, "I've tried Prosecco. That didn't work either."
Imagine him saying his message.
Eleanor, pour me another Prosecco.
Here's the thing. Steve will tell you this with a straight face. Yeah. Like, everybody should think of this.
I wonder when's he next done? We need to know. He can come and clarify whether that's right.
Tried everything.
Right. Well, now we're going to go to a conspiracy question for you, Shaka.
Oh, goodness me. This is the last thing I need. What's the conspiracy?
Tonight, VAR overturns. Clear indication of big club bias. Neither the City or Arsenal overturns were clear and obvious errors from calls on the field.
Well, everybody knows my feeling on this. I feel big clubs get the benefit of the doubt more times than not. That being said, both the decisions that were given today and overturned, I agree with them being overturned. Both of them. So I'm kind of going against my own conspiracy.
I don't know why
theory.
People have a problem with this, with this clear and obvious. Because here we have, right, let's just take the Burnley Arsenal incident. At full speed. Anthony Taylor, who's an excellent referee, by the way, thought it was a penalty kick. But clearly on replays, Ramsdale came out and did what the objective was, as a goalkeeper come out, was to play the ball and clean the situation up, which he did. So where's the problem?
In both incidents, the referees handled them exactly the way at least all of us have been calling for all VAR law. That they go and they have a look themselves and they make a decision themselves. And I thought it was well done by them. I agree with both decisions. So I can't, I can't buy into this conspiracy. Not this time. Tomorrow might be different.
I can help you.
Jan?
Tomorrow might be different.
I can help you with some conspiracy. The head of the German VAR was a former referee and he was a Schalke fan. And he was fired because he was too much in favor of Schalke decisions. But I still agree with the boys. I think the decision today were right, but there could be a conspiracy somewhere hidden, maybe in Germany.
Oh, that helped Schalke, didn't it?
Yeah. Schalke, really happy to have all those Schalke decisions go their way. We've debunked our own conspiracy theories.
My God, what did he do? Was he giving penalties against Schalke?
No, it was just small. The small decisions, it was always for Schalke. And then someone put that in, was spinning the story that he was supporting them. And then he was fired.
And even that didn't help them.
They've got to get this clear.
Yeah, exactly. Good point, Kate.
They've got to get this clear and obvious out of the out of the writing. It's either, have we missed an infringement, yes or no? Mm-hmm. Have we got a decision correct? Yes
Good.
Or no?
Yeah, I agree.
Let's just clean that up because,
Craig is our resident English language boffin.
What do you mean?
How are you correcting all the language?
Like how the terminology.
You're a boffin.
Yeah. He's a Shakespeare.
I am. working with John.
I've heard Craig called many things.
Working with John Champion.
This is a first. Shakespeare is a first.
He's working with John Champion all these years. He used to say words in the gantry, and I used to go, what's that mean?
All right. Okay. There's one more question.
Is there?
Yeah, because we've had such a fun, we don't even need to do some of the others, but this one's a fun one. Shaka, It's the very last question, just so our team know. And it's from A Song of Sass and Aya. Shaka, if you had to pick one member of your esteemed ESPN FC team that you would bet your house on you saving their penalty, who would it be? And who do you think would definitely score on you?
Hold on. What's the matter?
Put the question up. What's the question? I'll tell you who.
Who?
Does Dan count as missing?
Whoa. It's back.
Okay.
That you would bet your house on you saving their penalty?
Yeah.
I don't get this question.
So who would he definitely be able
count?
To save the
Does
penalty?
Does Dan count?
Yeah,
Dan's not scoring a penalty.
No, it has to be a player.
Dan's not scoring
a penalty. All right, then, yeah. It has to be an ex-player.
Dan
hasn't got enough power to get the ball, even from the penalty spot, to the goal line.
All right, ex-player.
Not right now, yeah. Not right
ex-player, now. Whose penalty I'll save. I'll go with Jan Agerfjordtoft because of his Middlesbrough connections. And the player who scores, Frank Leboeuf. Oh, and then he fell there.
That is the worst argument I've ever heard.
I said that for Kev. That was really for Kev, I'll be honest.
First of all, I scored so many goals, we can be on forever. I would probably have scored against you.
Let me
and
tell.
Secondly, Frank Leboeuf.
I think...
He's straight there.
What a time to freeze. What a time.
You've petrified him.
Yeah, I don't be too concerned about his hair.
I scored against you.
I had
an actor.
Poor connection. That's what he's going to get against Shaka.
That's like your penalties. That's the face he would have made.
Is that his brain or is that the actual
Listen, we've got to wrap it up there.
Frank Leboeuf used to take penalties.
Frank is a tip penalty.
Stevie missed a penalty in a European Cup final.
Oh, we're all bashing Stevie today.
He's not got gout, you know.
He's not got gout, but he's not here to defend himself. What I think we should do...
He's figured that out.
...is say goodbye and all go and have a glass of Prosecco in his honour. All right?
To avoid the gout.
Just in case you're out there, we're not suggesting that Prosecco is any good for helping gout.
No, it definitely isn't.
It's not a deterrent. No,
it definitely isn't. But
if you have
a Prosecco,
Heineken.
Think of Stevie Nicol. Anyway.
Made that Middlesbrough comment for you, you know, Kay, and you didn't even get angry.
I know.
I'm a little bit disappointed in you.
Anti-Middlesbrough discrimination.
It's so fun.
All right, that's it for the latest edition of Extra Time. Thanks so much for joining us, and make sure you join us every single day to see ESPN FC.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.